while you were working, you said the first year that you worked swing shifts from late afternoon until evening?
Yeah, it was from, if I recall, I think it was about 3 o'clock on to about midnight, I believe. Anyway, it was what they call a swing shift.
I'm wondering how the household chores got done. And that
I've done everything. In the morning, you see, I didn't go to work in the morning. And I did everything. I walked to the stores. I had to walk clear over to Anaheim or clear down to the foot of the hill on Pacific Coast Highway and pack my groceries home. Well, I hitchhiked every time I could hitchhike because I didn't have a car then. And I didn't have a little wagon then. And that's the way I got my groceries. And I bought in all the groceries that I thought we needed, you know, and carried as much as I could. And I did all that in the morning. I straightened up the house. I'd do my washing, do my ironing, and any cooking, any baking or anything I'd done. I'd done that all before I went to work. Maybe at 2:30 I had to go to work. Maybe I left home about 2:30 or something like that. Anyway, it's what they call a swing shift. And I did all of that, and the yard work, I did that. Marilyn helped me a little bit with the yard, but when she went to camp then the first summer, we found out that she had a murmur in her heart. I don't know what you know about that. But she'd had strep throat back home and whooping cough so bad, and I suppose that might have left to cause the murmur. Well, and I didn't force her to help do heavy work. She just helped me a little bit, and if she didn't feel like it, I didn't make her. Because now the boys, they worked, they had jobs. They had paper jobs and any jobs that they could get. So both the boys worked when they could. And anything they could. Well, I didn't force them to do the work, and I didn't make my husband do any work, because he'd come home. I think he'd get here about maybe a little bit after midnight. Then I'd get a breakfast or whatever you want to call it at that time for him. And then I'd go to bed. And then about, that would be around about 1 o'clock. Then about 5 o'clock, the paper boys would start throwing the papers and calling, you know, waking me up. The automobiles made a lot of noise because they were old automobiles. They'd wake me up. If I got 3 hours sleep for years and years, all the time I worked on spring shift, I was doing wonderful. But I'd done the best I could, because I had to get up then to see that the kids got their breakfast and fixed up stuff. And just as soon as I woke up then, I'd get up anyhow. But my husband could sleep then, so he had to go to work in the afternoon. He'd go to work. He worked from, well, what time did he work? I think at first he worked about the same shift that I did. And then he got to change. When I changed the days, then he changed from midnight on to morning. And that worked better for us. But he still would sleep during the day, you know. And I couldn't go to sleep when I'd come home from work until he'd have his meal. And I didn't like to eat and then go right to sleep, because that's not too good either. Over the time, like I say, if I got 3 hours sleep, I thought I was modest. And then I got to drinking coffee, and I drank coffee. I was a coffee fiend then, because I had to keep awake all day for all the time at work. But I never slept at work. That's one thing. I never was sleepy. When I worked, I could keep awake, so that was all right. But I got used to going out without sleep, which was bad for me.
Who took care of your youngest daughter?
She stayed at home when she got home until the boys had come home. From their work, which everyone come home from work, why she would stay here. And I'd try to have food for them. Well, they got so some of these kids in the neighborhood would come over here, and they'd eat up a lot of this food that I fixed for them, like bananas and apples and pears or anything, that I'd fix for the folks for the lunch the next day. And they'd always fix their own lunch. Because, you know, I didn't fix their lunch. They'd fix their own. I'd get cookies and little cakes and things like that. Well, some of these kids would come in and they'd eat up about everything we had, and my husband used to get so angry about that. I said, what can I do? I said, now, for about a year, my sister and her husband stayed here for about a year. But then that helped me, because that way they'd be here when Melon was home, so they could watch out. But we did the best we could, and we had my sister and her husband stayed in the one bedroom. We had two big beds in the front bedroom that the boys and slept in one bed, and Roy and I slept in the other. Marilyn and Eileen slept out here under the van. And then we had a day cot that when my sister just passed away here lately, she lived at Santa Monica. When she come down, she slept on the day bed. That was all of us here at that time, and we made out. That was during the war, but we made out. And my sister then, that she went to work at Douglas, but they put her on these long, I forget what the corrugated aluminum pieces, you know, they were putting as long as from here to there and way wide. She cut herself the first day and she wouldn't go back. So they come and they want to know if they'd put her on something else. She said, no, I'll never work there again. So she never worked there. So she stayed home here and got the meals then. And her husband worked at the shipyards and my husband worked at the shipyards.
What shipyard did they work at?
Well, you cross over, was it Terminal Island? I think it's Terminal Island. They cross over on the water. And my brother-in-law bought a car, a Model A car, so they go to work in the Model A. So that
did they talk about whether there were any women in the shipyard?
No, they never said. I never asked them much about anything. I think there were a lot of them, no, because a lot of the women went to work at that time, and a lot of them worked at Douglas. Because a lot of the men went to service, the young fellows. And some of the young fellows, they got scared of us women that they signed up anyway in the service because we didn't like to see them fiddle around and make their money and our sons or husbands or whoever was in the service. We didn't like that one little bit. And we made it known to those guys, and some of them got scared. And I know some of their wives said, well, my husband signed up, said they got scared of you women. I said, well, why not be afraid of us? I said, the idea, they fiddle around and not do much work, and then our boys and goes over there and come back. And then my sister was in service. She was overseas, and I said, I couldn't see it. I didn't have a son at the time in, but my sister was in. And I said, I just don't see it. And I was just about as strong as some of the rest of them. I said, I don't like the idea that they just dilly-dally around. I said, if it worked, it'd be different, but I said, they don't put out the work. And then our people may come back dead or may come back maimed for life. And I said, it don't go down, that's very good. I'm pretty outspoken or anything like that because I can't see it. And it's going to be bad for these young kids going in now. Maybe we're going to have another war before it's over with. They might think I'm crazy, but I'll say it. Some of these people want war so bad, I'm sorry that they can't go out and do the fighting themselves is all I got to say. That's the way I look at it. Better go out and do their own fighting instead of taking all our... They take our best youth, and it won't belong to them. The women will have to go. You watch and see. They'll have to sign up sooner or later. We had a lot of women in the other war. And some of them said the women couldn't do anything at the factory. Well, boy, they put out a lot of the work at the factory. The older ones are the ones that did the work because we figured that if we didn't work, we wouldn't keep our jobs. And the younger ones, they could just get dilly-dally around. And they got by with it. Of course, some of them, they were young and pretty and all that. But that's all right. That never bothered us. We went there and worked. And we said we did our share, you know, that we did the best we could. And so that's.
Did you have very much social life during the war years?
Mm-mm.
What kinds of things would you do with your spare time?
Well, all I did was went to church. We went to church for quite a while, and I got disgusted at church, and I quit going to church then. So I'd go to shows. I'd go uptown to shows. I went quite often uptown. I'd take Maryland uptown an awful lot. And I like to go to shows. My husband used to say, I must see a show over 411 times. I said, well, if you want to come see how many shows I see, why, you come with us. And he didn't want to go. So I'd take Maryland, we'd go up, and I'd get a hamburger, and she wanted a hamburger or a hot dog. She usually got a hot dog and maybe a 7-Up or something, like Coke or something. I'd get coffee. That was what we eat. And then we go to shows, and then we come home on the bus. That was my social life.
Were you friends with anybody from work? Did you spend time outside of work with anybody that you met?
Not special. I had neighbors that worked there, but I knew the neighbors, but that was all. I know their names and I knew them, but I never socialized with them because we never went anywhere to socialize. Like I say, I went to shows and that's about all. I went out to church and that's about all that I ever took in during the war. Then after the war, I joined the Blue Star Mothers. Now, that was when they had a son in service. Well, they were being infiltrated by the communists, and I quit that. I quit things if they don't suit me. I can't see, because I won't change. I won't change my mind. I wouldn't be a communist if I expect they'd kill me, because if they ever forced me to be a communist, I'd die before I'd become one. They might take over someday, but I don't believe in it. I don't believe in their way of doing. And I can't see so many of them coming over here ruining our country. So that's the way it is. But as far as social life, I never had much. And I didn't go to prayer meetings because I didn't have time, you know, to go to prayer meetings at night. But I went to church for a long time. We walked to church every Sunday, and for a long time, I got tired of hearing the preacher talk against the Japanese and talk against this, and they even talked against the Catholics. And I said, I'm not going to listen to that. I said, other people have the right to believe their way, and I think they'll go to heaven just as well as some more of us. And that's my viewpoint on things.
I'm very close contact with your sister when she was in the service. You said she was overseas.
Well, we wrote back and forth, but that was all. No, we didn't associate too much together because she was always busy. She was a nurse all her life, you might say. And then when she retired, she had two sisters that she took care of. And the one passed away lately. And the other was still in bed yet. She had two of them down bed fast there for a while. But she's still a nurse. She's had it rough because she's been a nurse all her life. She did what I wanted to do in the First World War. I wanted to sign up as a nurse, then I could go places. Mom wouldn't let me. She said, she told the ladies that signed us up, she said, if she signs the paper, her name on it, I want you to tear it up. She said, she cannot go. Well, I wanted to go so bad. Then the mom let her go, and here she gets to go overseas and everything, but maybe I wouldn't have done all that, but I wanted to be a nurse for a long, long time. Even when I graduated from high school, you know, the principal would counsel, you know, about what you'd want to do. I said, I want to be a nurse. Well, I was supposed to go to Lafayette Hospital and start in as a nurse. Well, a girl that graduated the year before me, she went out to be a nurse at this hospital. She died before the year was up. So Mom said, now, you can't go there. She said, I'll let you go to a school that you can learn to be a school teacher. So I said, well, I don't care. If I can't be a nurse, I'll be a school teacher. So I went to be a school teacher. I didn't argue too much because I wanted to go to school, and I enjoyed it, so it didn't bother me if I were a school teacher. So I taught 3 years, got married, and taught 1 more year. The folks wasn't too thrilled about me getting married, but I did anyhow. But then, so I'm not sorry. I said I could have married someone else, but I didn't want the other party. Party wanted me. I read in the paper the other day that a woman would be wiser if she married somebody that wanted her rather than she wanted them. Now, it was the other way with me. Now, the other man wanted me, and he begged and he cried because I had quit. And he happened to be a cousin of my sister-in-law's. And he was a church-going man. Well, I don't know how it ever happened, but I fell from my husband before. Well, I'll tell you how it happened. He had gone with a Catholic girl, and he quit her. And he was driving down the alley, and she and I was walking. And she said, if I ever get a chance, I'm going to cut his heart out. Well, right then and there, I think it's one thing that made me fall for him. I thought, gee, I'll see that she won't do that. And she had asked me to try to get him to go back with her. And I thought to myself, that I don't know whether that was the time I fell in love with him or not, but that's one thing that I think really started. Well, then when I started going with him, then the church people went against me because he didn't go to church all the time. Well, they went against me because I quit a church guy, and he'd become a superintendent of the church. And I don't think I told you. Well, I won't tell it on that, but I'll tell you why I quit, if you ever want to know. But I won't tell it on this. But anyway,
why won't you tell it on
this? I don't want that to be told. He's still living.
But, you can close that part of the tape so that no one would listen to it.
Well, don't close it up then.
No, I'm saying if you could say it on tape and then we can close that portion so that that's not...
Well, no, I think I better not. I don't want to take that chance. I never told anybody but my mother, but I did tell her why that I quit. But, well, I don't know. I better be somebody. I don't know his name anyhow. The reason I quit him because I had to fight him. And I never had to fight many fellows that I was with. And I was afraid that he'd take advantage of me. That's what I was afraid of. He was so strong. When a man... I don't know, they get so strong, and I was really afraid to tell the truth about it. So then, when I found out that he wanted to marry me, I was up to his house one time, and his dad made passes at me. And I thought to myself, if I'd ever marry him, I would have to live in with him and help to take care of the younger children while his two sisters would go away to college to be teachers. and then I'd have trouble with the father. And he probably would take the father's part, because we knew his father's brother was my sister-in-law's father, and the ladies that used to work for him said he'd just run them all over the house. Well, I can't feel sorry for a man that much, but I figured if I'd ever move in, that's what they was wanting me to be, move in, because I would work, you know, work on the farm and help take care of things. And I thought, well, there'd be trouble right then and there, because I could not put up with that, and I figured that my husband would never believe me. He'd take his dad's part, then there'd be trouble. So I decided to not marry him. Well, that kind of hurt, and yet I hadn't really fallen in love with the other guy as much as I did with the man I did marry. Well, then, of course, the more I went with the man I married, the more the church people talked against me, you see, the more determined I was. And they'd tell my brother, oh, I'd make her quit going with him, and I'd do this, because I was living at my brother's place and staying with them while I was teaching the same place that my brother was. And he'd come home, and he'd tell me what some of them said. I said, I don't know why you listen to everybody. I said, I don't listen to everybody. I said, Lori, don't try to take advantage of me. And I said, what's wrong? I never told my brother why I quit the other guy, and I never told his wife. He'd ought to put it in her face, but I never did. That's one thing I kept to myself. But I did go home, and I told my mother. Well, she knew about the uncle, about his uncle, that how these women, the women used to tell my mother that he'd run them all over the place trying to take advantage of them. Well, you take a man as strong that way, that I don't know, I was afraid of men at that time, to tell the truth about it. And I thought, well, I didn't want them to touch me. I was afraid that the first time they'd ever touch me, I'd become prettier, and I didn't want that. And that's what helped me to be respectable and everything that way. But my father used to say, he said, if any man ever take advantage of you, he said, I'll kill him. That's what my father said. Well, I wouldn't want that either. But then I had protection, you see, and my two brothers were protected too, in other words, because they'd take me on their dates when I never worried about going on dates till I was 18. So that never bothered me. I didn't care about going with the fellas. Well, then I was getting old enough then to go to college, but then when I went to college, I dated a lot up to college. And then I dated when I taught school. Well, I taught for 3 years, and then I started going with the husband I married then. And, you see, he asked me to marry him around about Christmas time, I believe it was, and then in May I got married. I was wanting to go back to college. He said, well, now if you go back to college, we won't get married, and I decided I better marry him while I had a chance. So that was the way that happened. But I still got his first letter that he's the one that asked me, I didn't ask him, to date, you know. And then he got a neighbor of his to try to coax me into dating with him. Now that's how we got to go on together. Because I wasn't thinking too much about going with him. And I had tried to get him to go back with this other woman, and he wouldn't do it because he said she had too much of a temper. She tried to tear the upholstery in the car that he had borrowed from his brother when she got mad at him one time, and he said that was it. And he never had nothing to do with her after that. Boy, he was mad too. But he had a temper too. But I kind of kept his temper down to a certain extent. He struck me once, but that was the only time he ever struck me. But he let his temper get the best of him when he'd be working around the horses or things like that. One time he was putting a tire on a car and he was beating up on the tire. I thought, well, he better beat up on that instead of trying to beat up on me. Let him get rid of his temper. But I was so afraid the children would have such tempers too. But I was lucky to keep them from having too awful temper. Now my other son, now he gets a little bit riled up once in a while since he's got older, but he used to be as jolly as anybody. But as far as the children are concerned, they never had temper, and I never had a high temper. I always kept my temper down because I felt like I was controlling myself by holding my temper. And that way I didn't say or do things that I'd regret the rest of my life. So that is what has helped me on controlling temper. But what made it worse for my husband, he'd go home and they'd make fun of him or laugh at him, you know, because I was independent, and they couldn't make me do things that they wanted me to. They wanted me to vote the way they wanted to, and I wouldn't do it. I never thought I was independent until I come out here. So one time one of the grandchildren said, I'm not independent. He said, Grandma, you're the most independent thing I ever saw in my life. I said, no, I'm not independent. Oh, gosh. But that makes you independent, believe me. I'm here to tell you. And if you don't, they walk all over you. If another thing makes it bad, a woman is Well, she's like a chattel to a man. And they still have that viewpoint. They still think you're beneath them. And that don't go down me. That's one of the reasons I never thought about getting married again. Being crippled, I wouldn't get married again, because I always said that I'd want a man that wasn't crippled and everything, and I said they'd want somebody that wasn't crippled too. And I said I never cared about going with anybody, because I really wanted the man I married. And I said that even if he got tired of me or didn't want me any longer, I still wanted him. And he used to say that he wouldn't have insurance because I would marry somebody else and they'd get his insurance. Oh, boy. He was jealous of me. I never made him jealous. Some used to say, oh, you ought to do things really to make him jealous. I said, no, I'd feel the blunt of it if I did. And I said, no, I don't do that. I don't do wrong. And I said, he might get out and do wrong, but I wouldn't do wrong. But I said, he's going to pay for it. Well, on his deathbed, he apologized for a lot of things. He even resented me going out to the fields, taking water out to the men, because I would be at his father's place, you know. And after dinner, I'd wash up the dishes and the pans and everything. Then I'd hurry and get the water jugs and go out to the fields and take the water around. I didn't see any wrong in that. And he told me on his deathbed that he couldn't stand to see me do that. I said, why didn't you tell me then instead of telling me now? I said, if I know that, I'd let his dad or somebody else carry your water and let you starve for water. I said, why didn't you tell me? I said, you never tell me anything. And he told me a few other things, a little bit like that. These are little things that bothered him rather than the other. I said, well, I said, there's one thing I'm going to tell you. I said, I never run out on you. And I said, I don't expect to ever get married again. Oh, he says, I know you won't. Oh, goodness me. But the nurses, some of the nurses at the hospital heard him talking to me. Well, it was one thing he made remark about. And I says, well, I'm so proud of the children. And I said, they belong to you, Pop. I said, they're your children. I said, your sister said one time, you could ask. I said, she told me one time, you always know who the mother is, but you never know who the father is. But I said, boy, you were the father of these kids. And I said, boy, I'm proud of them. And I'm proud the way they're doing. And I can't think why he made me some remark about that. He said, oh, well, they grew up on their own or something like that. I said, I don't care how they grew up, as long as they grew up the way I wanted them to. Well, then the nurse or somebody happened to speak over the loudspeaker. He said, Mrs. Bowman, do you want us to come in the room? I said, oh, no. Boy, that shocked my husband. He couldn't believe that anybody heard what he said. Now, back home, he would say things to me. Well, I took it, and I wouldn't go tell people, you know. He'd say things, and I wouldn't go repeat them. And nobody knew what he'd ever said, you know. Well, at that time, I said, well, Pop, I said, you always tried to keep things from anybody known, but I said, now I've got plenty of witnesses, but I said, that won't do me any good. He was shocked when that's the last he said. That's the last words he ever uttered, much to me, only when the night before he passed away, two grandchildren was outside, and I asked him if he could see him. He said, no, Mom. He said, I can't see. Well, I asked him if he'd sign the check and asked if I'd get a couple people come in and sign it, too, and he said, yes, he would. But when he told me he couldn't see, it didn't dawn on me, you know, when you're dying, I guess you lose your eyesight. Well, that hurt me because I couldn't realize that he was gone. And that has stayed with me. I can't get over that. But then the next morning, when my boy called me and said about 4 o'clock he passed away, well, he was dying at that time, and I did not really realize it. And I just fell back on the bed when he told me. I couldn't cry then. Now here lately, I can cry and I can hardly quit crying. Now when they told me about my sister, I thought that all day I was going to be able to quit crying. But it hit me kind of hard. But I couldn't cry. Why? I don't know. It just shocked me. Now before, he'd been awfully bad and I expected him to go any time. And yet you're never prepared when they do go. You're never prepared. You can imagine when the time comes, but you never know. And I never did want to see a person die. Never did. And so far, I've been lucky. I never have. But I never realized that he was going blind. And why? And it was because of death, I suppose. So he was dying, and he could talk to me, though. But he never said another word after that woman up on that bed wanted to know about coming. I said, no, let him talk. Let him get it all out of his system, because he should get it all out of the system before he's gone. But that don't bother me. That part don't bother me at all. But if he'd only known about his brother ever asking me to marry him, boy, he would have been jealous. Don't think he wouldn't have been. But I didn't ask the brother, but I just told the brother, I said, now if I'd have met him before I ever met my husband, I said, then things might have been different. But I said, Roy is the one I wanted, and it's a one-arm stick whip. And he said, well, he didn't blame me, but he said he wished, because he said, Roy, don't treat me right. I said, well, he does better now since he's away from out here, around some of his people. But I said, he'll do all right as long as other people keep their nose out. And I said, that's the only trouble we ever have to have. But Jake now would do things. Now, like I asked Roy to join the Masons. Jake wouldn't join it. Oh, God. Now, my three sisters got the 50-year-old, what do you call it, Eastern Star pins. And I'm so glad that my younger sister got hers. But I didn't belong to the Eastern Star. If Roy had joined the Mason, I'd have joined the Eastern Star, because I could have joined it anyway because of my father. But I didn't want to. If he didn't join any lodge, I didn't want to join any, because that way, well, you can't hardly go by yourself to the lodge meeting, and I like lodge meetings. Now, those are all right. Then there was another. What was it? I joined something else. And I can't understand why some people are so dumb that they let these Russians, Soviet, influence them. At one time, the Long Beach was ready to take over by the Soviets. Every department told. Somebody got found out about it before it was too late, and they revealed it. Otherwise, they was all ready to take over. Now, that quick. That was, I don't know whether it was during the war or after the war. Must have been after the war, I think, because it was the communists. At the time when the communists were so prevalent over the country, and the communists they were supposed to sign up, and they all didn't sign up either. They won't do what they're supposed to do. They're just like the Irans. A lot of them won't do what they're supposed to do. But at one time, I think it must have been 46, because I was in real estate at the time, that the communists was all ready to take over all the offices and everything. They was that strong in Long Beach. And why? People so easy led. I don't understand why they're so easy led. Why they can't think for themselves. Maybe I'm dumb. I don't know. I don't know at all. But I said, I just can't let somebody push me around and force me to do things that I don't want to do. Because I can't see it. But there's so many people are so easy. They're just being influenced by somebody. I don't get it myself. But that's the way the world goes. Is that all, Douglas, now?